Sports Open.
Now presenting. Cause and Creation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special Avatar Causing Creation episode. Megan Martin here with a very special guest co-host, Daniel Mertzloff. Say hi to everybody, Daniel.
Hello, hello. How are you? I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, we're so excited to have you back. And so after your interview, we had mentioned doing a bonus episode since we spent most of your interview talking about Avatar anyways. And we actually got a really great response of people who wanted it. So here you go, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so funny because I've loved the show for so many years. And it's just so exciting because over the last, last summer, like over the last few months when it was re-released on Netflix, to just see this whole new generation of people becoming obsessed with the show just like warms my heart. And I could go on and on about why I think it's one of the best shows ever created, if not some of the best storylines ever written. And now we just, like, perfect timing that we're recording right after this big news about Avatar Studios.
Oh my gosh, I know, I'm so excited. And honestly, like, I can't believe that it worked out this way. But yeah, no, they're actually giving the original creators funding to start their own studio. They're already working on a new animated film. And there's supposed to be a couple series on the way as well, which is going to be incredible.
I mean, it's so clear that the want is there. And, you know, I think it's something that, like, you know, when it was popular 10, 15 years ago, the internet wasn't really a huge thing where the online love of Avatar just proved so real this time when it dropped on Netflix of how many people love it and how large the community is. And I think that that's what sort of gave Nickelodeon the idea to be like, hey, maybe we should do something with this. Because, you know, before then you had like a terrible movie that everyone hates
and
forgets, like never happened. And then before then, like even the last two seasons of Legend of Korra were not even on Nickelodeon. They aired them. They just put them online, which is like they just didn't think it would be good enough. And they sort of rushed that whole process, which is why for Legend of Korra in season four, instead of getting like a great Ember Islands type episode, it's just like old footage because they didn't have time to animate and they didn't have the money and funding to do it.
No, 100%. Well, and I'm really glad that you're bringing that up too, because I think that there's a level of that also kind of speaks to the demand for it, because I remember whenever that was happening, they actually, the reason that they even continued the series online was because people were so upset that they weren't going to finish it. Like they were actually just going to cancel it. But it was like so many people were upset about like not essentially getting a proper wrap up on the story that they at least gave us that.
Yeah. And it's just so funny that like you have this outpouring of love for the show and then you still decide to be like, nah, which, you know, now they're making up for it with this, obviously. But, you know, it's also sort of what happened with the Netflix deal. And like that was just so heartbreaking to see the original creators leave the Netflix adaptation, and I'm so excited that they, you know, did it for this. But some of the details that I've been seeing about the Netflix adaptation already, I'm like, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, it sounds like they were gonna try to like apologies, I guess, to anybody who likes Riverdale, but I mean, like, basically the idea that I was getting was that they were just kind of like Riverdale it up, like they wanted to make them older, which I think honestly just kind of defeats a lot of the purpose of why the show was so great in the first place. And they were trying to make it like more gritty and like have more romance in it. And I actually, I have a really great quote about that too. One of the creators, cause they were also like so professional about like stepping down, but, yeah. They interviewed the creators about them leaving that Netflix series. And he said, "I try to be like an air nomad and adapt. I do my best to go with the flow no matter what obstacle is put in my way, but even an air nomad knows when it's time to cut their losses and move on," which I just thought was such a beautiful response to it.
Yeah, like I haven't heard that, and it's just heartbreaking because I'm sure that they fought till the end to not do it that way. And it's just like, if you want to turn Avatar into Riverdale. Like, you've missed the whole point of the show. And don't get me wrong, I actually love Riverdale. It's terrible, and I love it. Like, I watch it as trash TV. But
well, it's fun. Like, it's a soap opera. But, like, yes, that's not exactly what this is. Yeah.
No, and one of the other big things that I saw, and I don't know how true this is, because, you know, most of it's just rumors at this point, but that they're changing it so that Katara is going to be older than Sokka, which makes no sense. Like, the whole point is that, like, I don't know. Like, probably to sexualize her. That's why. Like, it's to sexualize her. 100%. I guarantee that that's why she wants to be older.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that so much.
Why are you not, like, you have Stranger Things. Like, that's the model.
Exactly. Well, and there's such a level to it that, like, apparently it's still going to come out. Like, Netflix is still working on it despite the original creators leaving. And I just think that there is such a level of hubris on their part with that, where it's like you are adapting something that has such a very loving fan base. And you were literally like, I mean, it's so obvious that people are unhappy because they're like, no, we liked the original thing. Like, we're excited for this because we loved the cartoons. And so if you're going to change that, then what's the point?
Exactly. Because it's like, none of the people who loved the show are going to watch it. Like, I've never even seen the movie because I can't bring myself to do it. And like, I will never watch the show. I can't bring myself to do it.
See, I saw it in theaters because I was so excited. And it was, it's as if like M. Night Shyamalan had heard his kids listening to, or like had like listened to his kids watching it in another room and was like, that'll work. And just kind of like pieced together like bits and pieces. It made no sense. It was just very disappointing. And like, even as far as like the casting was off, like they missed like all the important parts of the story. It was such a disaster. But I think like maybe the best way to do this, just to like have, I guess, some semblance of structure totally, is breaking it down book by book, because the series were separated into like book one, book two, book three. Mm-hmm. And then I would really, really love to talk about what we would like, what we're hoping to see from the new Avatar Studios.
Yeah, that sounds great to me.
Okay, so everybody listening, there will be laughter, there will be tears, there will be spoilers. So if you haven't seen the show, first of all, what are you doing with your life? And second of all, go watch it and then come listen to this. The first season was book one, Water, and this goes from essentially the first episode where we find Aang in the iceberg. He's found by Sokka and Katara, and it ends
at the Northern Water Tribe.
Yes, it does. The big battle at the Northern Water Tribe. I love it. I so have good notes, and you don't even need them.
nope, and never. I mean, that's like, I was obsessed with it when I was Aang's age. Like, it came out right when I was 11, and like became obsessed with it, and then just have remained so throughout the years. And it's funny because I, you know, there are like long periods of time where I go by and not watching it or sort of forgetting it exists, and then it keeps just coming back into my life, which is the best thing ever.
Okay, actually, this is fun. How many times have you watched the series?
All the way through, probably only like five or six times, only like starting episode one. Yeah, I know, it's so bad. It's really not that many episodes though.
No, it's very quick. I've seen it four. I watched it while it was on TV, and then I watched it twice in college, and then I of course watched it during the lockdown when it was on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, and between there, I often watch like my favorite episodes. Like a couple of my friends and I will just like hang out and like put on book three or whatever and just like watch or pick and choose episodes to watch. But yeah, I guess like five or six like straight throughs. I haven't really kept count.
Amazing. Okay, so one of the things that I would actually really like to talk about, like with book one, is I would love to know what you think. A lot of people, myself included, honestly, talk about there being a bit of a tone change in the first season. And I'll even like tell people whenever I'm trying to get them to watch it that like the first few episodes are very much like, I guess, just more in line with a more typical Nickelodeon cartoon. Like they were very silly, just cartoonish in that way. And then I feel like it really hits its stride on like the Storm episode whenever, mm-hmm, like we learn essentially like Zuko's backstory.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like the first, I always tell people the exact same thing. Like, if you're going to watch it, you have to get through at least season one, I say, just because it does, you know, it finds its stride. But then after that Northern Water Temple battle and stuff, and you like see the spirit world and UA, poor UA, and all that stuff, you're like, oh, we're not in a kid's show anymore. And especially the first like 4 or 5 episodes, even through like the King of Omashu, are so childish, which is not a bad thing. But I think what they did was like, oh, you know, here's like the cartoon you're expecting. And then it just got deeper and deeper and deeper until the point of like you're 10 episodes in and you're watching
Jet
and you're like, oh, wait, like we're discussing like the price of war and, you know, the way like the idea, the fact that they're killing innocent people and justifying it because they're part of the Fire Nation is like so deep. Like that is a lot to unpack. And I think one of the best parts of the show is you address so many things in that. You address like refugees in book two when Zuko and Iroh end up going to Ba Sing Se. You like there's just so many different things that get covered. But yeah, I mean it's a big tonal shift. And I don't know if there's a specific episode, but I think it really does change on the day of the solstice. Like that like two-parter when all of a sudden you see like Roku for the first time and you're like, what is going on here in the best possible way?
No, absolutely. And I think that there's such a level of crafting to that. Whenever we first meet Aang, like whenever Katara and Sokka find him in the iceberg, he is literally just a 12-year-old. It's like he gets out and he's like, hey, this is cool. I'm going to go sledding and we're going to play and this is going to be so much fun. Like they are kids. And there's also this level of like, it's laying the groundwork for all of the character development that's going to be coming up, like with Katara and especially with Sokka. Because I remember whenever I was like watching with the show, like I don't think I maybe was as impacted by it, but I remember specifically in college rewatching it with somebody and being like, oh my God, you're going to love Sokka. You're going to love Zuko. And then that first episode, he is awful. Like he's such horrible. A sexist jerk. And I'm like, yes. Oh my God, I didn't remember him being this bad.
He's the worst.
But I mean, that's like the thing too, is it's like, he's 16 and he's like, I mean, essentially the man of the village. Mm-hmm. And everything. And he's like trying so hard to like, you know, be the big brother and like be like the protector and things like that. And it's just, I mean, you know, he's just a kid. They're all just kids. And I feel like I love that you brought up the solstice one, because I feel like that's whenever we do start to see these like layers of heaviness of like, no, like they're like, yes, these are kids, but they're very real world consequences happening. And then we get to see this first thing with the Warriors of Kyoshi of Sokka kind of getting put in his place a little bit you know, having to humble himself and like, you know, like just this whole thing of him being like, well, ugh, girls, I can beat a bunch of girls. And then him like having to like put on makeup and like learn from them, which is so, it's such an incredible episode. Like,
yeah. And you know, with Sokka in the last episode, like Yue sacrifices herself, or last episode of the season, sacrifices herself, you know? And I think one of the most beautiful lines is her father. Do you know what I'm talking about? And Sokka asks him, and I'm so proud and so sad. And it's just like, I'm going to cry. Like it's just heartbreaking. So heartbreaking.
Well, and it's like that's also, we start to see like this first, I feel like that's whenever like it really starts to kind of like sink in that part of what is so beautiful about this show is that it is very much one of those like kids saving the world kind of shows, but it never lets you forget that they are still children. And I feel like with Yue especially, that's like one of the first glimpses of like just this young child having to do something that is way beyond their years, like just make such a decision like that.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to what we said earlier, it's in that first episode, like in the pilot episode, you get to meet Aang and you see him as a super innocent young child, and then thinking of him in the last episode and the way, I'm going to cry, I told you, like, I cannot talk about the show without crying, you know, he had to, like, he found a way to be himself and do the right thing the right way that is feels correct to himself, but is also a fully realized avatar. You have Katara, who can barely waterbend, becoming one of the most powerful waterbenders, fighting thousands of people at the same time, and becoming a bloodbender, and like almost, I hate to say, avenging her mom because she, you know, she chooses not to hurt the guy.
Oh my gosh, that episode is so, it's like, it's very scary. And mm-hmm. it's just that is like probably one of the heavier episodes in this whole show.
Well, because she's also always the guiding compass of righteousness.
Exactly.
And to see her bloodbend someone right in front of Zuko. First off, I love Zuko's reaction there. He's like, "What is happening?" Yes.
Just like the look of like just pure shock on his face, which, I mean, hands up to the writers, or not the writers, the illustrators, because, I mean, just the expressiveness of these characters is also incredible. And also, like, on the subject of Katara, too, there is, like, such a level of this show that I think is so amazing, in that, like, we have these, like, wonderful, powerful females, but we also, like, don't cut out, like, some of the more feminine aspects of them as well. Cause I mean, it's like Katara is such a, like, I mean, I would actually argue that, like, I mean, obviously, you know, Aang is the avatar, but like, she's probably one of the stronger benders in the show.
100%. And,
but there's also like this level of like, we get to see these other sides of her where like, she's also like the mom of the group. Mm-hmm. And even like the Jet episode, like, I mean, you know, despite how everything turns out with that, like, just seeing her like fall for the bad boy.
Also, you know, it's confirmed by the original creators that Jet was her first kiss, that they did kiss.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Well, and we also like in this season, like we had the fortune teller episode where she's mm-hmm. like so tied up with like the whole like the fortune teller, like, okay, but like, am I gonna fall in love? Is there gonna be a boy? And everything. And it just it never cuts out these just like beautiful, like more like just like childlike and coming of age moments either. And I also do have to talk about in this one, the Pirates episode. I don't remember what it's called.
It's so good. Yeah.
I think it's so funny because I think that it definitely like affected me when I was a kid, but I've seen so many of those TikToks where of people being like, so like, what's a scene from like a cartoon when you were a kid that like was maybe your sexual awakening? And it's always like Zuko having her like tied to the tree with like
yep.
her mother's necklace. Like, I can help you if you help me. And I was like, oh, Zuko.
Like, Zuko? Yes, please. Or like with the, when his hair, like his like season 3 hair. You're like,
oh, oh my gosh. Zuko is definitely one of my first crushes.
Oh, of easily like season 3 Zuko could any day could get it.
Oh, absolutely.
Any day.
Well, and I would like argue that like he probably has one of the best character arcs of all time.
Correct.
Just it's so complicated, but it also is like so thorough and beautiful, and just watching him like go from, I mean, he's just a kid. Like, I mean, it's insane that he really is, like, he's still just a kid, and watching him grow and learn and make mistakes and then make up for those mistakes. And there's also something really cool, I think, about, like, the fact that by the time we get to season 3 Zuko, he's not, like, he's not necessarily like, oh, I'm a good guy now, so I'm, like, really nice and things like that. It's like he's just has, like, the most wry sense of humor, and he's still, like, giving them a hard time and everything. Like, it's like he never loses, like, any of his Zuko-ness.
Totally.
But like he just, you know, like is doing things for more of the right reason.
Well, and like, you know, looking at him in that first episode and the old, like, obviously he's clearly the villain, the way they build him up to be the villain, but you often forget that he's just a child. And it's like in that episode, he was burned on his face by his father months ago. Or no, it was years ago
exactly.
At that point. It was years ago because he was 13, I think, when the burning happened. But like, he was literally burned in the face by his father, cast away, and say, like, you have to do this thing to return your honor. Of course, that's the only thing you're focused on. And
exactly.
Like, everyone makes fun of him for like, my honor, my honor, my honor. And it's like, well, if you were banished by your father at 13, wouldn't you be trying to do that? Or would you be like, nah, it's chill. And then seeing exactly. him, like all the different layers to that, right? So he's like, he's a kid who's always been taught since the moment he was born that the Fire Nation are superior and that they're what they're doing is actually good and helpful to the world. And then he is banished. He's trying to get back. And then as you see him start to realize, and it doesn't happen until the end of season one, when it's like he knows that what's his face is worse than the general. I can't think of his name.
Oh, General Zhao.
Yes.
Is the real, like, he is one of the only, like, true villains in this yes. show.
Yeah, and then it's like when Zuko steals the fish, or when he steals Aang, it's like, it's so hard because he can't decide between, like, that's when you really start to see him get confused, I think, is like, I don't know what to do here because I do have a moral compass, mostly thanks to Iroh, but my moral compass has always been this other thing. And then by the end, I mean, when he betrays Iroh first off, at the end of season two, like, heartbreaking, but I also understand, like, you have everything you could have ever wanted right in front of you, and you've slowly tried to learn a different thing and realize that life isn't exactly how you had been brought up to believe it, and wouldn't it be easier to get everything you've ever dreamed of than realize that life isn't that easy? Like, I think I would have made the same decision too. Like, I think most people would.
I think two of, like, the hardest decisions, I guess maybe not the hardest, but just, like, the most harsh decisions made in the show are that and there's one in the first season where Aang gets a letter about Sokka and Katara's dad. He hides it because he's afraid that, like, once they know that their dad is back, they're going to leave him. And it's one of those things where it is, like, it is cut and dry, like, such a, like, horrible and selfish thing. But it's, like, at the end of the day, you have to remember, like, this is a 12-year-old with literally the weight of the world on his shoulders. And he's scared. And so, like, and, you know, just sometimes, like, people make mistakes when they're in a situation like that, and especially, like, just someone as young as these characters are. And so that's why, like, I know that it, like, it's such an impactful thing whenever, like, Zuko, I mean, especially, like, I think, like, the really heartbreaking thing is him betraying Iroh. Yeah. But it's also, like, if you actually look at it from a character's perspective, which the writers definitely did, like, he wouldn't have made any other decision.
Yeah, how could you have? And then, I mean, that's why, like, his character arc is just so beautiful, is you see him, you know, realize that the world that he has been taught to live in is not correct. He learns all through season two with Iroh in Ba Sing Se, and, like, who he can be, what that life could be like, and then you're still offered the thing that you've always wanted. And, like, his father's an abuser, you know, and it's like you still have that trauma of, like, maybe I can fix everything. Maybe, like, all of this can go away. That when he makes that decision, I don't blame him. And then I think what I like that you said about him was, like, when he joins the gang, it's not because he's like, I'm going to be good now. It's like he needs to redeem himself. Everything that he is doing is because he realized that he betrayed Iroh. It was the wrong decision. And now he has to do everything in his power to undo that decision and make the world better. It's not like he's like, oh, I'm good now. You know, it's a very different mode and clear and exciting motivation that when he finally sees Iroh at the end of season three, it's just like, that's one of, I've never made it through that moment without weeping.
I'm literally gonna, like, tear up talking about it. Like, that is one of the most beautiful things I think I've ever seen in a TV show is, like, whenever he finally finds Iroh again, and he's just, like, he goes into the tent, and, like, Iroh's, like, not even looking at him and not talking to him, and he's just going on, and he's crying, and he's, like, apologizing, and then Iroh just turns around and hugs him.
And I was never mad at you. I was sad you had lost your way.
Exactly.
Like, because he trusted him. Like, he trusted him to eventually find his way back. And, yeah. Ugh.
It was just, it's so beautiful. And I also, I think, like, just there's a level of, like, we do start to, like, see this change in Zuko in, like, season three, whenever, like, he's kind of, like, found his new path and everything. And I also, I think that it's something that's just so incredible about the show is that that's also, I'm sorry, I'm going to get a drink of water. I actually got really ticked up from that.
Yep, me too. It's fine.
I love that. But, like, at the beginning of season three is, like, whenever they're finally in the Fire Nation and you have that episode, the headband, where Aang, like, he, like, covers up his tattoos with this headband and he goes to, like, a Fire Nation school. And it's just this very eye-opening thing of, like, him also realizing that, like, you know, like, the Fire Nation is, like, obviously the quote-unquote bad guy of the show, but then, like, they do take the time to be like, these are not bad people. They have been raised since they were kids to, like, think that they're the good guys.
Talk about propaganda. Like,
exactly.
You want to teach someone what propaganda is? Watch that episode. That's exactly what it is.
Like, this is such a, like, I think that maybe is, like, what's so incredible about this is, like, it almost feels like, I even hate to compare it to this, but, like a Game of Thrones light kind of thing. Like, it's just, it's very accessible, but this really is about, like, war and social commentary and people.
Right and wrong are not black and white.
Exactly.
Yes. And that's, like, you know, they touch on with a Jet, like, very immediately. But then it's the same thing in Ba Sing Se. Like, who is correct? Like, is it, like, there's just so many questions there, like, with the Dai Li and everything. And you're like, well, you're in control, but there's all this other stuff, and nothing is black and white.
And I mean, even, like, I love the Ba Sing Se the Ba Sing Se episodes are actually probably my favorites. There's so much of, I mean, first of all, like, it absolutely, like, destroys me. Like, whenever Zuko and Jet actually become friends, and, like, there is such a level of, like, you know, like, under different circumstances, like, they would have been best friends. Like, they are so same alike.
Same thing that Aang says in the first season. Do you think they could have been friends to Zuko? Yeah.
But it's just that there's all these complications. And then there's also this level of, like, you know, Ba Sing Se is, like, the big safe place. But I mean, it's also very terrible in its own right. And well, and just for the sake too of, like, you know, how this show does such a good job of not really having, like, traditionally just, like, villainous villains. Like, I honestly, like, one of the characters that I always feel the worst for every time I watch it is Azula. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw
she's 14
at the end every she's time with 14. Her. She's, like, she's not even as old as Katara, I don't think. Like, she is a baby. And just watching her, like, and I think that it's such a great, like, foil for Zuko, too, of, like, seeing what he could have turned into. Of, like, her, like, you know, like, closer to the end, like, just literally losing her mind. And it's, like, it's scary, but it's also, like, it's probably one of the more tragic stories is, like, Azula, like, completely losing touch with reality. And whenever they have her, like, they finally defeat her and they have her chained up. And she is just, like, spitting lightning everywhere. Like, just this animalistic, like, can't even control herself. And there's episode that, like, always, like, really affected me. And I think, like, kind of, like, set up, like, how much I sympathize with her is the episode on the beach where it's, like, Zuko and her and their friends. And she's, like, talking about, she was, like, my own mother called me a monster.
She was right, of course.
But she was a kid. Like, you can't, like, you cannot say that to, like, a child. You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, and watching her, like, interact with other people, you're like, she's been so isolated from the entirety of society. She's never done this. Her mother never really loved her. Her father never really loved her, even though she thinks he did.
Yeah.
Because God knows if he's even capable of love. Yeah, that moment is just so beautiful because she has been a villain this whole time. And then when she's finally defeated, you don't even, it's not a triumphant thing. You feel bad for her. It's somber in the music, in the way it's not shot, in the way it's animated. It's so sad. And you, like, I feel horrible and I'm sad for her versus, like, a, take that, you terrible person, which again, is such a bold choice. Like, it really is to, one, that they just, that they expected and trusted that children would be able to understand that feeling, which I think they do, because people often like dumb stuff down for kids, and this does not.
No, and I think that that's like, I think that that's part of why, like, we're literally doing a podcast about this show right now, is because it's like, if somebody, if I had never watched this show and somebody was like describing it to me, I would be like, you cannot show that to kids. Like, you know, like the bloodbending episode and Azula and like all of these things. I was like, this is not for kids. But then at the same time, like, I remember back to like whenever I was young and watching this, and like, I did understand it and I was affected by it. And it's just like this level of like, I don't know. I mean, I guess it just like kind of says something about, we do kind of, I don't know if it's like shielding children or pretending like they're dumb, but like there's this level of like, they do understand this. Like, kids really do get all of this. And there's a level of, you know, it's not always happy, but if more, this is, I guess, like maybe bad to say, but like if more of like the Fire Nation kids had had shows like this, maybe they wouldn't have grown up to turn into General Zhao's. Like,
100%. Yes.
Like, it's important to learn these lessons and like understand this kind of humanity, I think.
Well, and I think, you know, I know like we can mostly talk about Avatar and stuff, but something you said earlier that made me really think of Korra was the fact that you understand the motivations for all of the enemies. Like, there's no clear like evil character. All four of the bad guys in Korra, you understand their motivation and sort of agree with them on certain points. It's almost like Thanos. Like, it's the same way that I feel about Thanos. He really believed he was saving the world when he snapped his fingers. Also, spoilers for Marvel for anyone who doesn't know that. But
we tricked you into that one.
You understand his motivation, and you, like, I agree that like this is a problem, but your solution is wrong.
Exactly. And it's like,
with Aman, it's like, yes, there is inequalities between non-benders and benders that should be addressed, but you removing everyone's bending is not the way to do that. With Kuvira, yes, it's a hot mess. Yes, we need a stable government in the Earth Kingdom. The way you're doing this and taking over everything is not the right way to do it. The airbender.
Zaheer. I'm going to say Zaheer is one of my, because, and like absolutely to everything that you said, but like Zaheer is I think one of the best written villains I've ever seen. And that I mean, he is a horrible monster, but there's also like this level of like, it's so weird to like acknowledge someone is like, no, you're the bad guy and you're bad and you're wrong. But also I kind of understand everything that you're saying. Like, it's just like this level of like, I actually kind of agree with everything that you're saying. I don't think that this is the way to do it. Like, it's just like such a like complex thing of like, just so such well-written villains that they really do think that they're the heroes.
Yeah, and you know, I think in Avatar, it's once you finally meet the Phoenix King, he's a little more of like a classic villain, which I'm more than fine with because he's had two seasons of buildup. But you know, when you're looking at Zuko or even Zhao, or like such smart and depth of writing that like you don't find in novels these days, let alone animated series.
No, exactly. Well, and I would actually like, just because we've kind of like elaborated on like a couple of the different character arcs that happened, I would really like to take it back to Sokka's, and then I would like to do Aang's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, with Sokka, it's, you go first, because then I have lots of thoughts near the end, but I would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I just like I said, he was a character that like I remembered, because it was like I had watched it whenever I was like, I guess middle school into high school. I don't really remember like the years, I guess. Mm-hmm. But like I watched it when I was younger, and I just like remembered like in college, I was like trying to get somebody to watch it. And like Sokka was one of the characters that I remembered absolutely loving. Like, he was one of my absolute favorites. And then I'm like watching the first episode with somebody and I'm like, this guy is such an asshole. I was like, why did I like him? But then it's like, there's something that's like so amazing about like watching him grow from just being this very arrogant, sexist, like, I mean, he's such a jerk. But like just watching him like grow into a warrior and like somebody who is protecting everyone. And there's also, I think that something that I always really loved about him is that I felt like there was a lot of animosity near the beginning of, like, he was very hard on Katara. And I feel like maybe even with like the Kyoshi warriors, I think that that might even have been like a little more tied into like this level of animosity that he had for his sister, where it's like he's trying so hard to be a protector. And, you know, other people in this world have bending and he doesn't. And so just like watching him, I mean, essentially be like handicapped in this kind of a world, which is something that like I feel like Korra deals with a lot more. Like the fact that like you do have non-benders in this world, but like he is just at such a disadvantage from everyone. And like just watching him learn how to be humble and grow from learning from other people, and the episodes where he gets his sword, like he like learns from the sword master.
I have so many thoughts about that episode because I agree with everything that you said. And you know, he's also, as much as Katara is the mom, he's the protector and the dad, not only of the gang but of also his entire town, as he has been for many years. And he's still young, but you view him as like the elderly person in the group, you know, always, because that's who he is. And then when you reach that episode and you see him working alongside the instructor, he still looks like a kid.
Yeah.
Like, he's not tall. He's still scrawny. He's, you know, a hard head still, but watching him in that whole episode, like, get his moment, like, focus and, you know, hone his skills in a way that he's never been able to, in a way that we have constantly watched all the other people do, just every single time makes me so emotional. And when he confesses that he is not from the Fire Nation,
yes,
and it's like, I'm not worthy of this, it's every time. It's like he's always holding himself up to such a high standard that even in that moment, he can't do anything besides that. I'm like crying. Like,
no,
this episode gets me every single time of him being able to do that. And it's just the visual of him next to him specifically that always like reminds me he's still a child here, and all of this, they're all still children.
I mean, look, like Zuko had a really bad dad. Like, Zuko's dad sucked. And it wasn't that Sokka didn't have a good father. He also kind of grew up without a father. Like, he didn't really have a father figure in his life because his dad was off at the war. And I feel like there's a level of, like, that episode specifically where, like, he is actually getting to, like, learn from an older man that I feel like does kind of more bring out, like, the childishness in him when he's, like, constantly trying to act older and act like he's in charge. And then, like, you know, by the end of it, like, he is literally leading the armies. Like, he has become like such a leader, and he's like one of the only people who can't bend, which is so incredible. Like, the least qualified person, and he is like literally like the person in charge of all of it, which is so incredible.
Well, he's smart. Like, he's so smart. When he like comes up with the plan, he invents submarines.
Yes.
Like, we forget that he literally invents submarines. Like, he's so brilliant, and he's what is it? He's dumb, but he's smart. Like, in general, he's like a dumb boy, but like he's a smart person.
Well, he's very resourceful, and that's another thing that like I always really loved about the sword episode. I mean, like, honestly, like, he's kind of failing everything while he's learning, essentially figuring out like, well, I can't do it this way, or at least not as well as everybody else can. But I can do it this way, and then it's going to work.
He will persevere no matter what.
Exactly. Like,
it doesn't matter what gets in his way. He will keep trying until the end of time. When, in the last episode, the, like, heart-wrenching moment when he is trying to save him and Toph. See, this one always gets me, too. Like, this kills me. And, like, he is fighting to the last moment to try to save them. And then they think they're gonna die. Like,
yes.
You literally watch the both of them accept the fact that they're gonna die.
Oh,
you have
God.
To watch that on screen. And then, you know, thank God Suki's there. But, like, that moment of him trying to fight and, like, saying goodbye to Boomerang, like, it's so, so sad.
No, it's so, like, it's so hard to watch. And again, I mean, like, Suki is such a badass. Suki is incredible.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, and, you know, like, and there's this level of, like, all of these characters are, I mean, essentially, like, preteens, teenagers, like, growing into adults. And then that's the kind of, like, the thing with Aang that I think, honestly, it's, like, what makes me so angry about the fact that they were trying to age everybody up for, like, this new live-action show is that, like, there's so much to the fact that, like, Aang is literally just a child. And, like, I don't even, I mean, he couldn't even be, like, 18 by the end of the show whenever he is literally...
No, because it's less than a year. It is 9 months. It is 9 months since he comes out until the final battle.
Like, he is a child. And there's something that is, like, so incredible about, like, just seeing him have to grapple with, like, things that are so beyond his years. I mean, at the end where, like, he makes the decision not to kill the Fire Lord is so insane. I mean, to just watch, like, a child, like, literally have the entire weight of the world on their shoulders. And I keep saying that, and I know that that sounds so cliche, and, like, I just don't know anything else to say, but I can't think of anything else that describes it. Like, it's just literally, like, the entire balance of the world is on him. And even then, it's, like, he sticks to his ground, and he doesn't, like, all the other avatars are telling him, like, no, you just have to kill him. Like, I'm sorry, like, that's what it is. And he still is like, no, I'm not going to do that. Which is incredible.
Well, and, you know, I mean, there's so much to unpack there. And I think one of the reasons, and I've thought this for a while, because when he talks to Yang Chen, she says, you know, like, you have to do, like, what's best for the world or whatever. And, you know, you'd think speaking to another air nomad would have similar things. But what you also forget is, like, Aang is not just the Avatar now. He is the sole airbender if there was a whole nation, I think the idea of, like, him putting his avatarness over the fact that he's an airbender and doing what's best for the world would make more sense, except he's the last remaining, you know, guard of their principles.
Well, it's the, like, preservation of an entire people,
and that's that moment. It's not just Aang at that point. It is every single airbender that has ever lived has to, you know, in that moment is following him, where, you know, I think it would be easier for him if he wasn't the sole heir of that nation, you know,
exactly
at that point in time.
Well, and it's just that so much pressure, and we talked about it whenever we were interviewing you on Cause and Creation. I think just watching him grow with the bending too, that is, like, so wonderful to watch, especially because, well, and I think that it's so important that he was so young and, like, inexperienced, because there's a level of, like, the show just would have been a lot shorter if he had been the Avatar since day one.
Yeah. And I mean, that's also part of the journey, and, you know, them finding Toph, which we haven't even talked about Toph, because there's so much to talk about, of, like, how he has to, one, master all these in months, which just shows how powerful he is. Like, it takes Korra many years to master it. It takes Roku, like, leaves the Fire Nation and comes back, like, 9 years later or something, having finally done it, when he, like, finally returns. And it's like, there's no other option. And that was it. Like,
yeah.
There was just no other option.
It was like, no, like, you have to, like, you got to learn this all, and you got to learn it fast. Going up against people who have had a lifetime to master their own bending styles, and he has to learn 4 within, like, months, which is insane.
And you know what? You just reminded me of something that is a total fan theory, but it might be my, like, new favorite fan. I've known this for a long time, but I think it's my favorite fan theory that has never been confirmed nor denied. But the idea with Yue, do you know about this? With Yue being the Avatar? So, you know, Yue, when she was born, she didn't have she needed part of the moon spirit because she didn't have a spirit. And it's the water, like, water would have been the next Avatar. and the idea that she should have been the next Avatar, and she was born without a spirit because it should have been the Avatar, but it wasn't there, so that's why she needed the moon spirit to, like, come in and save her.
Oh, I love that.
Right? I'm so obsessed.
Incredible. I'm like, I'm gonna go ahead and, like, say that, like, even though that's not canon, I'm, like, making that canon for myself right now. And
I'm now obsessed. So
beautiful. Oh my
God. And, you know, I don't really know how it works, because then it's like, well, why did Korra get it then? Was she not supposed to? There's, like, lots of questions there, but I like it.
You know, like, there was a wrench in the cogs and everything, and that's, you know what, I'm gonna save this part for whenever we talk about, like, what we hope Avatar Studios, because I have a lot of things about the White Lotus as well.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I love that so much. Like, I really want to think that that is definitely it. And you mentioned Toph, and I definitely want to talk about Toph. And I want to also say that, like, but before we started recording, I was, like, looking up, because all the bending styles are based in actual Chinese martial arts. Mm-hmm. Water is Tai Chi, and Northern Shaolin is firebending. But something that I thought was actually incredibly interesting is, so Hungar is what they used for earthbending, but Toph's style is actually not that. Hers is actually based more in Chugar Southern Praying Mantis style, because she actually learned from the mole. What are they called?
Badger moles.
Badger moles. Yeah. She actually, like, learned from the badger moles. So there's also, like, this very interesting element of, like, okay, and I guess that this is kind of, like, me creating a theory now, but, like, her earthbending was based in, like, the actual creation of earthbending, whereas everybody else, like, by that standard, were practicing something different. And she's the first one to ever metal bend, which is incredible. But there's also, like, a level to that of, like, it almost makes it sound like maybe, and maybe this has something to do with, like, the way that Ba Sing Se was working and stuff like that, but, like, it almost sounds like earthbending kind of moved away from its original practice, and her going back to basics, essentially, and not even, like, I mean, just out of necessity, because, I mean, that's, she had to, because she was blind. Yeah. Like, her going back to basics with it is kind of what allowed her to be able to move it forward and progress into metal bending.
I mean, 100%. And you know, there's sort of precedence for that in the idea of, like, Zuko losing his bending and having to go to the dragons. And, like, and he was significantly more powerful after doing that. And it was because you can learn, like, he learned fire bending, but it was one specific way. It wasn't the most powerful way because he wasn't truly connected to the core of what it was.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing where Toph has no other option than to be constantly connected to the earth, because that is the only way of for her to see the world is through earth, where, you know, sighted earthbenders have lots of other things at their disposal. So it's like they're not completely connected to the earth in the way that Toph has to be, and the way that the badger moles have to be. So, like, when she is feeling, punching that metal and feeling the stuff inside, it's just, it completely flips on its head the way that you even perceive how you bend.
No, exactly. Well, and I also, like, I want to give such props to this show too for, like, really delving into where it's like they really do, like, take the time to, like, okay, well, if you can water bend, then technically, I mean, people are made out of water, so you can blood bend. And you know, you never see it with Aang, because he comes from, like, such a peaceful background, but, like, you know, with Zaheer, you really get to see, like, how violent and destructive airbending could be, which is also, like, such a beautiful note to, like, the fact that, like, honestly, like, the most, like, deadly and powerful bending is done by monks who would never use it for that.
I've always thought that air is by far the most powerful element because of what you can do. If you really break it down in that way, you could just suck all the air in a bubble around someone, which is sort of what Zaheer does.
Yeah.
And just, like, pull all of the air out of a room, and that person wouldn't even, like, they would just not be able to breathe immediately, but not their cells would have no outside pressure. You would actually start to boil. Like, if you were to, like, suck the air completely away from someone's skin, they'd start to boil.
Which
from
is
inside out.
Like, that's so scary. It's
horrifying.
And so, like, I feel like it's just, like, it was so important that, like, the group of people who are capable of something like that were people who literally chose peace, which I think is amazing. And, like, and just to get back to Toph, too, like, I feel like that's, like, just such an example of, like, brilliant writing for, like, a handicapped character, essentially, just in that, like, I've always loved the fact that, like, how much they almost, like, kind of make fun of the fact that she's blind. Like, there are so many jokes throughout it. Like they'll, like, be like, you know, like, somebody will, like, hold a piece of paper in her face and she'll be like, I don't know, it sounds like a piece of paper. I don't know what's on it. I can't see. Like, so, like, she makes so many jokes.
When Aang and Sokka write a sorry note to Katara.
Yes.
It's like, guys, really?
No, it's like, it's just, it's so funny. And then, like, and, like, just, like, watching her, like, you know, like, they go up in, like, the blimps and everything, and she's like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, just, like one of the only times that you actually kind of, like, see her out of her element. And I also, I've always loved with her that, like, not that she doesn't change. I mean, like, she definitely has, like, character growth and that, like, she learns to not, I don't want to say not be so independent. She learns to not be so stagnant and to, like, be a part of a group. And totally. which is incredible, but she never loses her attitude. Like, she never actually changes. And I mean, even with Korra, like, you can see, like, I mean, even her is, like, an old woman. Like, she still is, like, just as, like, tough and sarcastic. And I always, like, loved, like, the episodes where she's teaching Aang earthbending and Katara's trying to be like, well, I think that maybe he would respond to more of a gentle approach and everything. She's like, no, I'm gonna throw boulders at him. And he's going to learn one way or the other.
I mean, that's also Earth, though, right? Like, that just is, that's just how that is. It's like, it's going to come at you and you got to stop it or not.
Exactly. And well, and we have to talk about Iroh, too, who is just, I, like, honestly, like, I think, like, one of my favorite things in the entire season is, like, just the episode that's, like, just him living a day. Like, yep. Just such an incredible, incredible, kind man. Like,
poor soldier boy.
Oh my gosh, don't. Well, and it's just, and it's something that I really loved about, like, people rediscovering this show in, like, more of, like, the internet age is, like, I feel like people were, because, you know, like, whenever they were filming this, like, he did actually pass away, like, before the show ended. And so, like, that episode was very much a tribute to him and, you know, they used him singing.
I mean, it's absolutely devastating because I guess him singing that was one of the last things they ever recorded. And he sort of knew he was not doing well. And it's just like, oh, so heartbreaking. And, you know, with Iroh, it's also, he sort of already took Zuko's journey, right? Where it was like, he was a general. He was trying to invade Ba Sing Se. And he thought that that was the right thing to do. And then after the loss of his son, as he was really figuring everything out, he realized, like, how messed up all of that was. And I wonder, like, when he joins the White Lotus, like, was he always a part of it? Like, did he, like, make sure that they never got into Ba Sing Se? I don't think so. Like, I really just don't think that that's true. Like, I don't like when people say that. Because then when he comes back, you know, in the last episode, and it's like, I always, or no, in, it's in season two, when he's like, I always thought I would be conquering Ba Sing Se, and now here I am. Being welcomed in its arms or something like that.
Yes. Transitions for, like, a lot of these characters. And we're kind of seeing him at the end of his. Like, I mean, you don't have to agree with this or anything, but, like, just the way that other people in the Fire Nation would talk to him, like, you know, like, about back when he was the Dragon of the West, it just, it seems like he was such a fearsome general. And so it's just, I feel like I would love to have known, like, his story just in that, like, I feel like maybe.
Yes, like, exactly.
Because you know that, like, before that, I mean, he was one of the most powerful people promoting the Fire Nation.
He was first in line to become Fire Lord.
No, he turned it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you also, you have that letter, like, in one of the flashbacks with Zuko and Azula when they were, like, really young. like they're getting a letter from him, like his like letter to them. He's like, yeah, he's like, it's beautiful. I wish you guys could see it before we burn it to the ground. Like,
yeah. And you know, it's just with him too, as important as Zuko's relationship to Iroh is for Zuko, it's also his lost son. Like, he views Zuko very much as his son after having lost his own, you know?
Well, and I almost wonder, too, and I mean, this is absolutely speculation on my part. It's very clear that Iroh loved his son, but I almost wonder if he sees Zuko as, like, a second chance at maybe being a better role model. Because, I mean, just like, his son died in a war that he, in the end, didn't support.
Yeah.
Which, 100%. I mean, I can't even imagine. Like, you know, like, actually, like, losing your kid to something that, like, you realize is wrong in the first place. Like, there has to be, like, a level of guilt that comes with that as well.
Yeah, I like the way you said that, that it's almost like his chance to make up for that. And, you know, it just makes their relationship even more special. And, yeah, it's just, I love Iroh so much because he's also so genuine. And the way, like, the fact that he and Toph, like, met and became friends randomly, you know, it's just stuff like that where... yeah, it's so heartbreaking, and he's the best. I love Iroh.
I do too. And so I definitely want to talk about like what we are hoping to come out of Avatar Studios. But before I do, just to lighten things up a little bit, I would love to talk about the Ember Island episode.
Oh, it's so good.
That's something else that I think like speaks so much to like the writing on this show is the Ember Island episode is where Aang and Zuko is a part of them now. Like the whole gang are basically just like, hey, we need a break. Let's go see a show. And they go and they watch this play that is basically a recap of the entire show, but just done in like very like low budget theater technique.
Oh, it's the best. And what I love that they do, one, it's like an homage to themselves and like to all the fans of like, thank you for doing this. They're also making fun of themselves. Like one of my favorites is when Jet dies and they're like, did Jet just die? And it was very unclear, like making fun of the fact that they made it unclear if Jet died.
No, well, they did it with like the Great Divide too, because like the Great Divide is just like known as just being like a purely like dumb filler episode. And it's like there's even like a part in the play where they're like going over and they're like, wait, shouldn't we go down there? And they're like, nah, let's just skip it.
It's so funny. And you know, also as like a theater nerd, it's just like they're playing on all these very specific tropes. Like the fact that Aang is played by a woman, it's
yes,
like with it's like a Peter Pan almost.
Exactly.
Oh my God. I love it so much. And it really is just a like, I think it's like a love letter to the fans of like, thank you for doing this, you know?
Because it kind of advances the plot a little bit because there's already a lot of, you know, there's already kind of like a lot of back and forth between like Aang and Katara and like, you know, like whether or not that's actually going to be romantic or not. And, you know, like whenever he does finally make advances and she's kind of like turning him down. So like it does like advance the plot that like it does kind of like force them to have a conversation when they are watching the play. But like there's even like a part of the play where they like literally do like a Zutara thing, which was like such a like fan ship favorite. And it's so funny because like Dante Basco even, I think it was at like Comic Con or something like that. Like somebody asked him, they were like, are you a Zutara fan? And he was like, listen, I thought that's where it was going. Like,
I mean, I always thought, like, I was totally Zutara because I thought Aang was either asexual or gay.
There was I think it was on Disney Channel, a show called American Dragon, Jake Long, where those two actors actually do play, like, a couple that ends up together, which is very
funny. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's,
that's outstanding.
Because Dante Basco played the lead in it, and then she played the love interest in it, which I thought was very fun. But no, like, just that episode was just such an incredible wrap up of just like, like you said it best, like a love letter to the fans.
Oh, yeah. And you know, we do that in theater a lot too, where it's like, it's almost like a homage to the fans, or they do it in a lot of TV shows. Like I think of like Arrested Development was great about this, or like 30 Rock with bringing back Rural Juror in the last episode, yes. Which is like one of my favorite jokes. It's really just, it's rewarding the fans for being a part of it, you know?
Yeah. Because like, just, you'd still it's like a thank you for the support.
Exactly. You'd still enjoy it if you didn't know what they were referencing, but by doing that, it's really like a thank you.
100%. No, it's just, it's such an incredible episode. But I mean, and you know, like, and it still ends on like that very impactful moment of like, cause you know, this is a play like done by the Fire Nation for the Fire Nation. I mean, it's like, it's part of the propaganda. And so, you know, like they all do like, I mean, essentially like watch themselves die in the war on stage before they're about to go fight the war.
That's also with that episode where you're like, oh, this is so fun. And then it's like, and then they died and we will win and the Phoenix King rises. And you're like, oh God.
It's just, it's such an incredible way to like create stakes and to like just acknowledge everything before that. And like the other two things that I always really loved about it was like, cause it actually was like a thing with like just the art style that, they did actually like get, they changed the side of Zuko's face that his scar was on.
Yeah.
Just like in the show. And then it's like, he's like sitting outside and then it's like some girl thinks he's essentially like cosplaying and she's like, your scar's on the wrong side. And he's like, no, it's not.
I love it so much. It's just, yeah, it's just funny stuff like that. Like, it's just so good. And I'm just so excited for these studios. And, you know, there's so many things that I would like to see. I would love to see an Iroh backstory. I would really love to see more of Avatar Wan. And I think like early avatars are like that. I don't need to see anything about Ruko. Nope.
Oroku. Nope. We're done with him.
Nope. But, I mean, there's just so many different things. Because I also would love to see more adventures from the gang. Like, you know, we have the comics and stuff like that, and then we see them as adults in Korra, but I would love to see more from them.
100%. That's, like, the one thing, because I know that they have come out and said that, like, they're being very particular about, like, not wanting to essentially run what they've already created into the ground by, like, keeping, like, elaborating on things that we've already seen. Which I appreciate a lot, but I will say that like I would love to see them make maybe like a film or a TV show out of the graphic novels. I thought that those were really fantastic stories. I don't think I've ever 100%. Cried over a comic book until like the one where they find Zuko's mom. Like that got me.
That whole comic, I read that actually over quarantine. I bought it and read it all, and I was like, again, it's just like so. It's so good. Like, we could also have a whole episode on the comics.
I know. Honestly, we could do like an episode by episode.
Which also just speaks to the fact of how amazing it is that we could sit here and talk for over an hour and be like, wait, but we have so much else to say.
No, I know 100%. And I totally agree with you. Like, I would love Iroh backstories. I would love maybe like a series with the White Lotus. I would love one with Kiyoshi.
I would love that.
Love a Kiyoshi either like movie or TV show. I just think that would be a fascinating story.
Well, and you know, everyone is so obsessed with Kiyoshi right now that I will be very surprised if they don't.
I know. So fingers crossed, right?
Oh my gosh. I'm just so excited and I'm just excited in general that people like the show, because I don't remember if I said this when I was on the show or last time, but I bought all the DVDs when I was in college from Amazon because I thought everyone was going to forget about it, and it meant so much to me that I never wanted to forget it. And it's like, I just remembered that moment of like, oh, I have to buy this so I'll never forget it and before the world does. And like, here we are talking about it and new content is coming, and it's just so exciting.
No, it's so exciting. And I mean, you know, it's just, it couldn't happen to a more beautiful, like just world that's been built. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's really, really nice that we have so much to look forward to for sure.
Yeah. And I can't wait, you know, in a year from now when we can hop on again and discuss all the new content.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I will definitely be emailing you.
Oh, always. I'm very serious. I'm always happy to talk about Avatar.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Daniel, thank you so much for coming on. And I'm Megan Martin, and I've been Megan Martin. And Daniel has been an incredible co-host. Thank you so much.
And thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye.